It's time for Blunt Force Gamers, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, and my fellow gamers. Today I'm sitting with Kazrakan.
Greetings.
And, well, if you're wondering where Darth Blasphemous is, he's decided to take a lovely job that says mandatory overtime whenever we fucking feel like it. So he's not here this week. Neither is...
Moniker.
Moniker.
Moniker is completely absent as well.
I know the Moniker's absent. He's normally sitting right there.
Yeah, between the two of them, they're sticking up the place.
I know, right?
Yeah. They're not even here.
We're two men down for this podcast.
Dun, dun, dun!
So, we've got our topic this week, which is magic.
So, I caught up this concept. How do you make magic feel alive? How do you make magic feel like it lives and fits in your world? And the same goes for technology. We can do that, too. Hey, kid, want to buy some death sticks?
Because I've got magic in my death tube.
Roll intro with magic-y.
You're telling me to roll the intro?
Yes.
Okay. Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Okay, so we're going to talk about magic, and we've learned about one of the other magical things, that if we use a different port on our soundboard, everything comes in super crisp and clear, so we're not, like, I don't know, giving our microphones a blowjob here. Plus, it's not summer, or it is summertime.
It's still summer, it's still bullshit out.
Yeah, it's still bullshit out. So, with our sound quality jazzed way the fuck up beyond my control... If you hear sirens, dogs barking, children screaming,
birds,
or Targets. Yeah, whatever, dude. Yeah, we're getting everything, dude. Everything. So that's magic on our end.
Dude, I'm surprised that these mics aren't picking up the cigarette smell. They're that sensitive.
Well, just let me wave a little more towards you.
I'm sure you could.
I could.
I can still smell it all as is.
The door is open because it's summertime.
I know.
Okay, so magic. Motherfuckers.
Magic motherfuckers.
Hey, that's one of my favorite lines from that movie.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about how to make magic more part of the world, more of a living entity in its own right, something that you can do in low fantasy games where magic is just awe-inspiring. You found your plus one sword or your talisman that summons a ghost or whatever. Straight all the way to high fantasy where people have Jeffrey tubes that launch people at high velocity across the town and... glowing platforms and floating castles, and what would be more magical than that other than a successful Brie Larson film?
That's kind of the theory.
Okay, so let's start off. How do we make magic a living part of the world where people are just used to it?
So, depending on how high you want to go, you've got the high magic settings and the low magic settings. High magic settings are like you're talking about. Jeffrey's tubes, magical transportation circles, it's an everyday life sort of thing. Magic is that prevalent that it's just there. On the other side, whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, I totally heard that, dude. Keep going.
There's low magic, where magic is the commodity of the rich, of the powerful, of those who don't have to listen to whoop, whoop sirens going down goddamn street. Cheeky motherfuckers!
These sound effects are provided free to our podcast by local law enforcement.
We'll get back to them on that later. But, so low fantasy, even, you know, a successful, halfway decent cantrip is a rarity. So, in low magic, like, something as simple as, you know, lighting up a cigarette from your palm would be awe-inspiring. It would be like if someone could just magic, you know, in today's era. It would be if someone legitimately pulled some X-Men level bullshit. You'd be like, oh my god, is this real? And how do you, like, the thing about how you reflect that is, everything in your world has to reflect that. On both ends.
I think that high technology settings, especially like in a D&D setting or other fantasy game, that's my obligatory I'm going to edit that out later.
One of the many.
I don't know. Anyway, in a fantasy setting, see, I did it again, I stammered. It's those damn car sirens outside.
Every little thing.
Recording in summer's a bitch. And I'm not sweating. I love my listeners, but I don't love you guys enough that I'm going to lock all the doors and windows in here, torture Kazrakan with cigarettes, and sweat my balls off at the same time. So, cope. Anyway, for a fantasy setting, I'm thinking lower level spells, like you mentioned cantrips, maybe a few first level spells. These would be ingrained in magic items all over the place. Mm-hmm. You would have street lamps, essentially, that are all torches of ever burning.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, where it's innocuous, it's in the background, but it's very prevalent at the same time. Just street lamps. That's, you can't get really more mundane than street lamps. And normally in a fantasy setting, you got the oil lighter guys who walk out during the evening, light all of the lamps, make sure that the oil is refilled. But if they're ever burning torches, you're saving a ton of money over the long term. And since they're magic...
Until you get hit with some manner of magical equivalency of an EMP, you're good. And, you know...
Exactly.
Typically, if you're going to pull that kind of shit off, it is a calamity unto itself.
Well, when you get into super high fantasy, I want to say, super high fantasy would be floating castles. Super high fantasy is there to, like, just... For lack of better terms, it's there to wow the audience. It's just, look at me, I'm the GM, look at what I can create. Oh, this is so awesome, they have a floating city and water that is in endless fountains and lit up stairways and floating platforms that take you to the royal palace.
Yeah, that would fit. And that would, you know, that would be applicable. And you could still do this in lower magic settings, but it upgrades it from a rumor to... a story, to a legend, to a myth, depending on how far back you're going to slide. So, like, a low magic setting, there's a fucking myth of that floating castle. That same castle, now you're in, say, medium, is like, yeah, it's a story, but I don't believe it. Sort of kind of belief is going to come from the general populace. And then the high magic is like, oh yeah, that's like 4 miles that way.
Well, at the same token, you look at our modern-day equivalent, which would be technology.
Mm-hmm.
100 years ago, androids and robots were a thing of super science. Nobody even believed in that shit. And now we're working on the very precepts of nanotechnology, and of course we've got that scary fucking thing called CRISPR. You know, these were high science topics that even back 30 years ago in science fiction novels, people would be like, that's more of a myth. But still, technology is very prevalent in our modern day. I mean, we've got recording devices, right? Ta-da! We're using them now. We have access to an entire plethora of almost the entirety of human knowledge in a pocket-sized device that transmits that knowledge to us invisibly.
Without wires.
Without wires. It's completely invisible as long as the batteries are charged.
Hey, look. You don't even need wires for that anymore.
Exactly. Technology and magic have a lot of similarities in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you keep the magic, you know, mundane, for lack of better words, because magic is anything but mundane. But if you keep it somewhat mundane, like self-cleaning horse troughs. You know, your fantasy game, the adventurers wander the town, and they got brooms. They just go around and be basically Roombas.
Sweep.
You got your Mickey Mouse brooms floating through town being Roombas. That's innocuous. It's not, like, overwhelming. It's just something that's there. It's a living part of the world.
Here's a fun one for you.
What's that?
Refrigeration. Icebox magic.
You know, actually, I've already done it.
Sorry. It happened, and it can be done. It's just how it's received. That same concept... We can store food for longer. crack.
We're picking up everything here. It's awesome. So I'm stretching and everybody can hear my old bones pop. So yeah, refrigeration magic. I've already done that in a D&D game. I use Preserve Organ. as one of my base spells out of Book of Vile Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And just any zero-level cantrip that casts a cold spell.
And just slap them together.
Just slap them together in a box, and boom, you got an instant refrigerator. And refrigeration technology actually is not...
It's not that advanced as far as things go these days.
Well, these days, it's not as advanced as far as it could go, but it's something that we've had, and we have this archaeologically proven for over 5,000 years. There are basically giant towers that you can build out in the desert, and the way that they diffuse heat, you can store food and grain in the lower part of the silo, and it'll keep just below room average, about 40... trying to remember the numbers, but I know it was below 60 degrees, but above 40. Somewhere in that threshold, it was like 55 degrees. You know, in the desert, where it's 110.
That's pretty good.
Right outside the door. So we've already had this technology.
That's pretty wicked.
Yeah, blew my fucking mind.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit of that brain splatter right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, that people, they didn't understand the physics behind it. They didn't understand the thermal dynamics.
But it worked.
But it worked. So they used it. And they refined that and went over it over and over again. Even if you're playing a primitive campaign, that kind of technology could seem like magic. Or as Thor said, eventually the lines blur.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's other, like, other aspects. I can, you know, part of this goes not just to the DM, but also to the player. That player who goes, I will twist my arm in a circle and pop my wrist or my thumb down and drop my whole hand, and out of that will spring a swarm of bees.
Oh, that's one of my favorite spells, man. Bees for everybody.
Bees!
Bees!
Yes.
You get bees. You get bees. You get bees. Everybody gets bees!
But as it goes, you know...
It's not very benevolent.
Yeah, yeah. It's all a buzz in this whole RLL play.
That's right. Well, we gotta stay to the benign topic of magic in your world.
So the point that I'm making here... That description as a player of casting the spell breathes life into that spell, into the world. It's like, oh, this must be how the spell is cast. That's cool. So I could do this. It's very, very similar to how wizards learn in that regard. Wizards learn through study and science, and basically they're nerd scientists with enough power behind their will to be correct.
Actually, that'd be a great character concept. And that, just going a little off tangent here, is a nerd with like the giant horn rimmed glasses, whose name is like, you know, Wendell, and he is part of Lambda Lambda Lambda. So you could always like, and anytime the group runs into an ogre, you know, the ogre just automatically knows one word in common: nerds. Why did you clap? Are you testing our soundboard?
Well, no, it's the follow-up is like, ogre, nerd, smash.
That's oh my god. Dude, I was making reference to ancient movies.
And I completely miffed it.
Yeah, you wow. I just aged myself. Because I remember Revenge of the Nerds. That was an awesome movie back at the time, and now it's become reality.
Yeah.
The nerds have won. Mm-hmm. We have Hollywood. What's left of it.
We'll talk about that later.
Nerds!
Yep.
Nerds!
But at the same time, how do you make a bard who's, you know, vicious mockery, because it's bizarrely powerful, is like, you are the product of incest! Why does this hurt so bad? Why do you just feel bad? Bad enough that it's just distracting you from it swinging.
Well, you're talking about bards, and bards are, of course, part of the medieval fantasy genre, and in medieval times, incest wasn't all that uncommon, especially amongst royal circles.
It was a bad example, but
if you live out in the middle of a farm village, and it's wintertime, the snow is 4 feet deep, what else have you got to do?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So, you know...
For me, it's anything but incest, but that's besides the point.
Neither here nor there. So, you know, this goes both ways. As the DM, what you can do is you can be extremely descriptive. You can voice out and show your players, or describe it incredibly vividly, for them what they're casting. It could just be, you know, produce flame. All of a sudden, you've got a little ball, a happy little baseball of fire, which you can then, you know, throw and do whatever, which is that kind of archetypal thing. But instead of snap fire, what if you went, you know, you kind of pulled it from your palm, and all of a sudden you've got this ball of fire that looked like it just pulled out of your body heat. There's a lot of ways that you can breathe life into this, and you can make magic feel tangible. Or not tangible, depending on your setting.
Well, I make magic feel very tangible, especially with the spell Mage Hand. One of my favorites. Especially for pranking, because there's, you know, to get the bad villain dude, he's up there and he's, you know, on his perch, he's, ha ha ha, I shall destroy all of this world within a fortnight. None shall stand in front of my glory. You cast Mage Hand when nobody's looking and stick your finger in his mouth.
So that, all of a sudden, within a it's a great way to diffuse the situation a little bit at the same time.
Or make it worse.
Or make it worse, depending on their reaction.
But to make magic a living part of the world, it has to be fairly commonplace. One of the tricks that is common in some games, you know, when they're going that route, the GM will give everybody an innate magical talent, just kind of like as a proof of concept that the entire world, everybody has something. You can walk into a village and at least a quarter of the villagers have some sort of zero-level offensive spell.
Right.
You know, it has to be all over the place. You can't just be like, oh, well, the magic is super common in this world, and every time you run into a villager or you go into a village, there's nothing magical. It's as mundane as any other game.
Yeah, and this also goes for the monsters. If you're going to add that the world is so suffused with magic that everybody has some manner of cantrip that they can throw around, some little, like, dinky fire thing, or some just their words hurt, or blah, 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 that also goes for the monsters.
Heaven forbid you run into a giant who's got stone throwing and gravity bow as his spell.
You know, we saw how that happened.
He throws a boulder at you, and suddenly it hits one size category larger.
I wouldn't... That kind of stuff can be a little game-breaking, but, like...
I know, but I know...
A spider that has light? Or a, you know, a goblin who has, let's say, prestidigitation. That's another good way to fuck with people. Or...
Yeah,
prestidigitation.
I just hate fucking saying that word.
Yeah. It's basically street magic.
It's like whoever invented that word, you know, they were like, okay, I need a word for magic. Okay, I'm going to call my assistant, and they're just going to hit the bottom of my chin while I try to talk, and whatever word comes out is going to be it. What does it sound like? Prestidigitation. That's good enough. Just write it out.
Or, you know, a kobold with ghost sound. All of a sudden, that kobold and its trap warren makes a lot more nasty. It's like you hear the sound of a rock getting thrown, or crickets, or bees, or any number of things that, you know, a devious little trap maker can think of, and I'm sure there's many.
One of the other ways that I did magic in a world, it was not high magic. It was more like those who had magic would help out, but magic users were not, like, every fucking day people. And you can apply the same thing to a game world when you're doing magic, is the spellcasters who do help out in ways that, of course, help society as a whole. There are signs that magic are there. One town we ran into, there was a constant smog. And it was a gnomish, basically, factory town in a cold era. So, of course, the smog happens to stay where it is because you got all around you in a big circle, mountain range. And the spellcaster came in, they looked at the situation, they're like, wow, everybody here is dying of disease and lung problems and all sorts of other bad shit. So they used the spell Produce Flame, which produces smoke along with the flame. And, of course, got a little janky with the GM and said, look, I want to cast a spell in backwards. Just reverse the spell. And they created these giant tubes with the reversed spell inside of it. So instead of producing flames, it would consume flames.
Or consume the smoke to produce
and,
flame.
Yeah, and it would consume the smoke also. And of course, what's the byproduct of getting rid of all the contaminants but clean air? So the wizard went around and constructed a bunch of these like oversized barrel deals with fans in them. Popped them up all around the town. And they were basically eating all the smog out of the air and replacing all the smog with fresh air. So when the players came through, you know, later on, they saw these weird turbo barrels and they're like, what the hell are those? And they're like, oh, well, that's the reason we can breathe in this town. You know, it was a combination of magic and technology at that point.
But at the same time, it's done cleverly.
Yeah.
That's the awesome thing. It's like player creativity with magic is a big, big thing. I want to take the light cantrip. But only if with these two fingers. Why?
Poink! Light! So I can poke people in the eyes!
That is a harmless cantrip that you have now used to harm things. Congratulations. Or, what was it? Critical Role. One of the players on that one used telekinesis against a bullet. Landshark, for those who are not familiar. Armored Landshark of burrowing in nastiness and munching.
Armored Landshark of anger.
It's like a shark, a rhino, and a mole had an angry, angry, oversized baby.
And then put that angry baby in mithril armor.
Yeah, pretty much. But what this player had done is he had looked at telekinesis and be like, well, I can lift up like 2 tons with this, right? Yeah. Can I try to pry off some of its armor scales? Like, just rip the whole thing up with this titanic strength? Sure.
I don't see why not.
He succeeded, and then Matt Mercer had to just, like, I get a -5 AC because you ripped off a big section of its armor. Congratulations, you now have a big piece of its armor hanging in midair. What are you gonna do with it? I'm gonna slap it with it.
Yeah, creativity with spells, and that's one thing that magic has over almost everything else, is it's all subject to interpretation. You could do the same thing with a bullet, but instead of tearing off the armor, a bullet weighs less than 2 tons.
You can just throw the damn thing.
No, even better, you can just pick it up and then have your cleric cast Blade Barrier and lower it down slowly over the blades. They're going to hit regardless, and just you've got an outdoor shredder. You're just Gensuing the fucker. And when you're done using your telekinesis, you just cast, you know, produce flames around it, and boom, smoked bullet for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Because magic is so interpretive. You can do so much with it, especially when you get into creating magic items. And I just did a video on YouTube here last week, a really shit one that was, like, unscripted. So I'm just like, rah, 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 through the whole thing. But I went on this whole precept. I'm like, in the latter half of the video, I'm like, look, if you want to make your poppets, you know, and poppets, for those who are not familiar with them in the Pathfinder setting, are only a foot tall. They have 12 hit points. It's basically a sheet of dry paper. You hit it, it dies. It has a strength score that's equivalent to, I don't know, a kitten. They're not very combat capable, but people keep overlooking the one thing that is like a defining trait of these little tiny constructs. They're creatures. And as creatures are, by the book rules, they have slots for magic items. You got the necklace. You can... rings, bracers, armor, tunic, hat, boots. You can make a full suit of adventure gear for your little poppet familiar. That's custom made for it to do whatever job you need it to do at the time.
And just swap it.
And the only drawback this little shit has is only having 12 hit points. 22 if you upgrade it. That's a level 2 fighter with a slight con bonus.
Yeah, it's like a +2.
But at this point, it has item slots. You can put a +5 ring on the poppet, and nobody can say anything about it because it is technically a creature. Therefore, it has slots to wear magic items.
Yep. And so that little 22 HP little motherfucker is all of a sudden walking around in a goblin cave and just shredding everything because nothing can still beat it.
Exactly. You get this guy, and that's another thing too, is I was looking through constructs here recently. And I'm doing a character at the moment, a concept character who's a monster maker and uses poppets. which is just borked in its own right if I get out of control. Because you look at it, you're like, oh, what are these good for? And, you know, a lot of people look at them, they're like, oh, they're not, you know, just beginner things, and they're not very combat capable. And I'm like, fuck you.
Let me just prove you wrong right here.
Just on the average right now, I could produce 2 a day without actually, like, ramping shit up. And even producing 2 of these a day, like, in a week, taking the weekends off, I've just produced 2 a day.
10.
10 of them. That's 40 a month. So I spend 1 month just make 40 of these little dudes. And then the next month, I start equipping the shit out of them with just dinky little items that are custom crafted for poppets. And instead of, you know, making them for players, I decided to put a bunch of drawbacks on the magic items so they can only be used by constructs or creatures of a specific size. I drive that cost value down to the point where it becomes financially feasible to equip my 40 little poppets as a miniature disposable army of destruction. And, you know, like the first 10 of them in the front row, as I go marching them in, I will already have those 10 outfitted with everlasting flamethrowers. Yeah. So you just get this wall of a flame that walks across the battlefield, and I'm like, who's laughing at 12 hit points now, bitch? they're being obscured. You can't hit them with your archer because all you see is a wall of flame coming at you at 20 feet per round. Still, it's a slow-moving wall of flame, but it's going to get to you eventually. You can't see what's behind it because the flames are bigger than the fucking poppet. So that's the whole point, is magic and creativity go hand in hand. You can't look at something and go, oh, well, this is how the spell works in the book. And one of the first things that turned me on to this, and is also relevant to our subject today, is you look at D&D 3.0, you go through all of the armor listing, and then you get to Demon Mail Armor, listed underneath Armor Stuffs. You only need one spell, Craft Demon Armor, which is way severely OP. And it's seriously, like, you're... Level to create it is fairly mid-range, lower to mid-range. You know, you basically just need the feat, craft magic arms and armor. You need access to one spell. And you craft, like, this plus, oh my god, gnarly-ass armor that, like, has a field of pestilence around it wherever you go. And it fills other people with dread. And it's just one core spell. Like, most of the other items in there, you know, require 2 or 3 spells to be able to pull it off succinctly. And when you look at a Demon Mail Armor, you're like, huh? Bring her! This spell is barely even related to the effects that the armor has. And most players, you know, they don't catch on to this fact that, you know, they look at the magic spell and crafting a magic item, or crafting even a technological item, and they're like, how do I make the rules work in my favor towards my vision? Instead, they look at the rules and go, well, I can't do that because I don't have the proper core spell. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. Demon Mail Armor. This is creativity right here. They just took a spell that's barely even related to the end result. And still, it's canon. So why can't I use a spell of flame to cook a portable camp stove that's self-cleaning?
Yeah.
Why would I need prestidigitation or the clean spell when I can just throw a flame spell and says, oh yeah, well, it just heats up the inside until all the crap burns off.
Self-cooking ovens.
Basically a self-cooking oven.
Yeah, and, like, that's how a lot of ovens clean themselves these days, is literally just nuking the crap out of whatever's inside.
For fuck's sake, the way the rules work, you can basically take an acid spell and just make a dishwasher out of it. It's like, oh, yeah, it just hits it with low-grade borax. Just
bloop.
Yep, just boop. You know, just, oh, it's my portable dishwasher. But, and you look at the spell, and you're like, but that's a damage spell. And you're like, don't care. Demon Mail Armor. The core writers don't care, neither do I. I'm just going to be creative.
Yeah. Or, what was it? Your bee thrower?
Yeah, and the bee launcher. You know, and when you're dealing with a world where everybody, like, if we go back to the beginning here of our podcast and we say, everybody has a 0-level cantrip.
Yeah.
That means there's going to be a lot more people who are going to have crafting skills like Scribe Scroll or Craft Poppet. Or even those commoners who get up a few levels higher and they'll have Craft Wondrous Item. Most of these people are not adventuring types.
They're going to use it for mundane shit.
They're going to use it for mundane life hacks, basically. You know, you're going to have people who build dishwashers in a busy tavern. You're going to have people who build self-lighting fireplaces. You're going to have people who build ceiling fans.
You're also going to have people who build beer chillers.
Yeah, beer chillers.
It's like, here, set your drink on this. It'll stay cold. and it'll be cold every time you pull it off to take a drink.
How awesome would that be if you go into a tavern in your D&D setting, and they've got coasters, and basically you set your beer on it, and it frosts your beer for you?
Yeah.
Especially on a hot summer day, you walk in, you're like, oh, I want a cold beer, but it's summertime, and, you know, if it's down in the cellar, it's not going to be frosty enough, and they're like, nope, we've got that covered. You're going to look at a lot more quality of life items that, you know, I would have to say kind of like... A laundromat, yes, definitely, but I'm kind of going, it's not going to be Industrial Revolution technology that it's going to mimic, but a little bit later, but definitely pre-1940s.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of technology that's quality of life in a magical medieval setting that's going to help people out.
Hey, I've got these wagon wheels, and they don't break. Or if they do break, they just fix each other. How much are you going to buy?
Yeah.
You're going to have those enterprising little motherfuckers.
You're going to have enterprising motherfuckers all over the place crafting this shit. And, of course, if you're in favor, then we're going to call them the Red Wizards of Thay. That's a side tangent entirely for those who know the Faerun setting. But still, and the price of magic items, too, you have to figure on the economic side, is going to go down.
Yeah.
You're going to look at least probably like a 25% value decrease just for your average magic item. So you got the Everlasting Feed Bag meant for your horse out of the canon books. I would have to assume that if it's about 2,000 gold pieces, roughly, you're probably going to be able to pick that up for 1,500. Because it's going to be a lot more common.
Yeah. And, you know, other neat ways that you can do this sort of thing is... Yeah, I know. I kind of spaced on my thought.
He's having a brain fart.
Yes, it's noisy, too.
He's in an episode about magic, and magically, his mind has vacated his body.
So, you know, you've got the enterprising magic motherfuckers who are going to sell stuff. Oh, right, that's what it was. You can also make magic item crafting contingent on a material that is effectively calcified magic, or crystalline magic, just straight up raw essence. It's like, in order for...
Plastic, motherfuckers! I can shape it into anything I want it to, and it lasts forever. And since it's magical, it doesn't biodegrade!
Yeah, that sounds right! But you could, you know, I had this idea as like, well, one of my characters wants to play a leyline studying wizard. Crafter. How is he going to know where all the ley lines are in a whole new continent? He's not. What restrictions am I going to put on him to make that feel real? Well, any magic item that is crafted or purchased already has a material that you harvest from ley lines. We'll call that Luxin, because I'm being lazy. And so all that cost is already set in. That's factored into the economics that already exist.
Magic.
Yeah. And now...
Magic economics.
Now, you know, I'm like, okay, I've got this material. I've got this system. Here's how this affects you. You're going to start with a fixed amount of that, so you're not going to go too off the scale early. You want to earn it, you can find it, and you can earn it in the world that you'll be playing in. But you gotta find it. And then you gotta harvest it. And possibly refine it, depending on how you're feeling. But from there, all that investment of your time and effort, you will have the premier magic production on the continent.
I do warn game masters, though, about clever players. Creative players.
there's a reason I put that clarifier to limit you early.
Yeah, there's a reason, but still, and when you're crafting magic items in Dungeons & Dragons especially, it is so easy to get cheesy. Even before they fucked up the PF20, DFSRDB, blah, 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 the website.
Yeah.
And just made it so easy to break the fucking game by the new rules that apparently nobody fucking reads. Except for the players, of course, who were like, numbers! But even before then, there were things that were added in the game back in like the year 2000. And one of my favorites at that time was Spell Trigger. And they really never defined spell trigger. Normally when you think of spell trigger, it's a guy holding a wand, he points the wand at somebody and says, Expelliarmus!
Yeah.
Or he points the wand at his own face and says, Avada Kedavra!
You know, or just, whatever.
Or whatever. If it's a rod, they point the rod at somebody, you know, and they're like, "Ooh, I summon 1,000 snakes from Suteka's cock sack. Devour my opponent in darkness." Whatever. There's usually some sort of trigger that's attached to the device. When it's a spell trigger, you know, like somebody who passes through the door is automatically cleaned, which another quality of life item, I guess, after a long day of farming.
Dude, any medical tent?
Oh, yeah.
Medical tents would have
medical
that.
Medical tents? Oh, wow. Yeah, medical technology in the Dark Ages. Now, that would be something awesome.
Yeah, that would change the world.
But they never really define spell trigger fully, and this is one of the things I'm going to go on to, is, you know, you got to be careful with creative players.
As he jerks towards himself.
Yeah, as all right, so technical difficulties aside, what I'm trying to get to.
Creative players.
See, I'm so creative, I made the computer die while we're recording.
No, without even trying.
Too much power. Sitting right here on a folding chair is too much creative power. Anywho, when I first discovered spell trigger, I was like, why not when item it was when the item is covered in human urine. that was legitimately the spell trigger for one of the first items I built. And the GM just let it slide. Right? He's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, I make these balls, you know, glass balls. They're about the size of a jawbreaker in our modern life.
So what, an inch or two?
Yeah, they're about 2 inches across in diameter. And inside the ball is 3d6 sonic and 3d6 fire. So it's basically a modified fireball with a 20-foot radius. The original intent was, you know, as I'm creating my first one, and they're a bit expensive, you know, at low level, but my original intent was to make these into grenades to throw at my opponents. But then I'm sitting there and I'm making one, and I'm like, I'm going to change the spell trigger. So I changed it to when the ball was covered with human urea. And then it was going to down, the storyteller, of course, didn't catch on to it. The game master, he's like, oh, what are you going to do? Piss on it to blow it up? Whatever. No, we get in the town, and of course it happened to be enemy territory that we were headed towards the whole time.
I see where you're going with
this. Exactly, yes. So as we were leaving town after our spying mission was complete, I just dropped a few of these off in the outhouses. And within a couple of hours, 5 outhouses had exploded. Because naturally, somebody's going to go in there and take a leak. Kaboom! A 20-foot blast radius of sonic damage, of course, is going to launch whatever was in there
up
through a pressurized tube that was dug downwards into the ground, upwards.
And then fire.
And, of course, fire with the methane, just to make it more pretty. And I accomplished this about 20 years ago when I first started doing this crap back around 2000. Yeah, so it was about 19 years ago. And
oh, boy.
It just went downhill from there. I just kept getting more and more creative. And a lot of people I see on forums when I go on to, like, Plebit, they ask the stupidest fucking questions. They think about things so inside the box that there's a box within a box.
And they're stuck in the little one.
They're stuck in... I don't know. Most D&D players seem like they're playing with Russian dolls. But they're the Russian doll that's in the very center going, how do I make this spell work? And they can't think of anything. And I'm just like, fuck your Russian dolls. I'm blowing everything up. Like, I was at work the other day and I got bored and there was an argument that came up. You know, which is more powerful? Gunslingers out of Pathfinder or wizards? You know, and they're like, and this one guy, he's all about the fucking gunslingers. Like, all across all levels, they will demolish a fucking spellcaster, no problem. And I'm like sitting there, I'm starting to crunch numbers in my head at work the other day because of this argument coming back up. And I'm like, if I live in a world, my character lives in a world where magic items are readily available. So back to the topic of our podcast, of course, magical worlds.
Magical worlds!
I'm like thinking, okay, I will take on your fucking gunslinger and I will even cripple myself. I won't cast a spell. I will only use one item.
And I will win.
And I will be level 5. You can be whatever fucking level you want to be. You can be a level 20 gunslinger. I will kill you the moment I know you're on the same planet as me. But I will only use one weapon. and I will replicate the gun that you're using against me to do it. But as long as I know you're alive, you are not safe. And I'm sitting there and I'm crunching the numbers on this thing, and it got to the point, of course, you know, when you're creating magic items, and if you're in a world where magic is prevalent, you're going to have a player who's like me, who looks at this and says, how do I make this god-awful? How do I make something that can kill Cthulhu in one shot? Godzilla?
Bee cannon!
No, this isn't a bee cannon, dude.
Dude, that's just so funny to me,
though. I was sitting there, I'm crunching the numbers, and like crunching the magic spells and the feats required, and all of the little shit in the background that's by the book, rules as written.
Dun, dun, dun.
Not rules as intended, but rules as written. And when it all came down to it, I made a hypersonic, gravity-fed railgun. And by hypersonic, when it fires the bullet out of the front end, when it comes out of the ejection port, it is moving at such a speed that the material you're using, because I'm using the hardest material possible by the game's rules, is coming out at about Mach 25. And that's with the speed limiter put into it. So you don't destroy the barrel while it's cycling up to fire that round. Because once you put the round in the gravity chamber, you have to aim the gun at something and shoot it, or you're going to just fucking blow everything up. But you can build this at level 5. And if you're playing in a world where magic is very common,
someone's going to do this.
Somebody is going to do it, whether it's a player or an NPC. Somebody's going to build some insane item. That's another. It's kind of a warning story because I just told this whole story about I made a magic item that's way too big for the world, and this is also a warning note for worlds that have magic being very prevalent. You know, if magic is a living, breathing part of your world, and you include it, especially. Like we mentioned, in a lot of quality of life advancements, you know, whether it's timekeeping, hospitals, cooking, cleaning, teeth cleaning, or agriculture, self-refilling waterways for your fields, you know, just simple things like that. There's still going to be that one guy who's a lot like me who looks at it and goes, how do I weaponize that self-refilling
pool,
or how do I turn that endless beer into a weapon?
Enter the decanter of endless water, pressurized.
No, actually, the decanter of endless water, and I'm going to give this one away. Normally, I keep my tricks to myself. You know, I don't tell anybody how the ICBM is built.
Yep.
You know, I will not tell anybody how my orbital weapons platform is built. I don't tell anybody how the punt gun is built. Only one other person knows, actually, the core mechanics of that one. And when he replied to me about how it destroys worlds, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to shelf that one away and never tell anybody how it's built. But I will give away the decanter of endless water build, weaponized, because, well, it's awesome. And
it's more easy to balance against.
It's more easy to balance against. The GM can balance against the endless decanter of, oh my god, holy shit, than they can a punt gun.
H2, oh my god!
A GM can balance easier against like my dirt launcher or my bee cannon or my flamethrowers or even my self-repairing poppets. They can balance against those way easier than they can, the average Scud missile that I launched was about 10,000 fireballs over a carpet area.
Yeah.
At high altitude, that's an entire kingdom. Because fuck them. You know, so my more extensive builds are too dangerous to actually release to not just players, but worlds. Because once you put in this factor into a world where you have a nuclear option,
players are going to use it.
You change the whole social magical dynamics of the entire world. You will now have kingdoms at stalemates with the nuclear option pointing missiles at each other. And bam, you got D&D Cold War.
That could be an interesting setting.
And then you got to wait for Gorbachev to show up and tell Reagan, hey, what's going on? Anywho, the decanter of endless water. Now, as we all know, this is about a mid-range item. It's a few thousand gold pieces. On the low setting, it pours water into a glass. Yay! On the medium setting, you can use it to wash yourself off. It's basically a portable shower.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a stream coming from a hose.
Yeah, I think there's, like, the 5e version has, like, four settings. Trickle, stream, flow, and torrent.
Yeah, torrent, flow. I'm not familiar with 5e, as you know, as fluently as many people would want me to be. The third setting in D&D 3.0, 3.5, and Pathfinder is the torrent setting, but they actually gave the PSI. And this is part of the kicker. Water being ejected from a decanter of endless water is 300 PSI. This is the equivalent to a fire hose. Now, given that you're shooting basically a pocket fire hose at somebody, I would advise you to have a good strength score or somebody holding you, bracing you up while you fire this thing. Of course, you've also got, when it's on the super setting, you know, you just let it go.
Torrent.
Yeah. Run. I mean, if you want chaos, you just open the thing up, put it on high, and just let it go. It's going to fly wherever it wants to because the decanter does not have the mass to stop 300 PSI ejecting out of it. And one of the other ideas I had when I was playing an undead character is you can destroy a world using nothing more than decanters because you're like on a boat. You open the decanter, turn it on high, toss it overboard. Rinse, spit, repeat. Just keep doing this. Just keep it tossing decanters into chasms and shit. You're in the Underdark? Fuck it. Flood them. Flood them out. When the Dark Elves rise to the surface, we'll just stab them to death. You know, just the Avalanche might be a bit of a problem, but everybody else will either drown or come to the surface, like ants.
Yep.
And then I'm wondering, you know, I was talking to somebody, and I looked it up in the book after the conversation. The decanter of endless water draws its spell supply, it draws that endless amount of water, from the plane of water.
Where everything is water.
And when you get into planar metaphysics, all the planes are infinite in size. Or a vast majority of the planes, especially the elemental planes.
Yeah, those are infinite.
The elemental planes are infinite in size.
Hey, guess what? There's a reason that you can have 36 decanters of endless water going at once.
Exactly.
It doesn't give a shit.
So, going on that, and I was looking at the rules and stuff, and I'm like, what happens if I change the core spell? It's drawing from the plane of water right now because I have to use a water-based spell. What if I use a earth-based spell? Does it become a decanter of endless rocks and gravel?
Gravel thrower.
A gravel thrower, right? What if I use or go into like the demi-planes? And this is fun. If I go into the plane of fire and earth, then I have a magma launcher that's launching magma at 300 PSI. Yep. So that's where the decanter, the endless flamethrowers come into is I usually tap into the quasi-elemental plane of magma or just straight out go for fire.
Right.
And now I'm launching fire at my opponents at a range of about 50 feet at 300 PSI.
Oh, so, fuck you.
Yeah, so not only is it just like a blast of fire coming at you, it's a blast of fire at 300 PSI, which is probably going to knock you over from just the heat wave alone.
And then the physical impact afterwards.
Then the physical impact, because fire is weird. But yeah.
It's solid enough. Now here's the kicker with this. It doesn't stop.
Exactly. It's a decanter of endless pain. Endless fire. This is how I get my limitless fire.
Flamethrower tropes.
Limitless flamethrowers. Is I just decanter it into this endless whatever, and don't make it water. Just make it painful.
You know. Acid.
Acid. You can do that. There's a quasi plane for acid. So, you know, you can.
Dude, lightning cannons.
Lightning cannons. And here's the fucked up part. The super fucked up part. Only by changing the core spell as to which plane you are getting the energy from, the price remains the same. So. If you open the book of anything, and it's got magic items listed, you look at the decanter of endless water, look at the price on that, and go, okay, I want a decanter of endless magma. Same price. So now you're firing molten rock at people instead of water. Surprise!
Surprise, motherfucker.
So there's one of my early on creative builds for our listeners who want to get janky in their games and piss off a GM because these will do it.
In a quick hurry.
Because there's nothing like having a row of tin poppets
just
standing there with magma launchers. that shoots superheated rock at your opponents from 50 feet away.
At enough PSI to knock you people over.
Yeah. And by the time you're level 7, they're pretty much cost-effective. You can build a new decanter and a new poplet pretty much overnight. No problem. See, you lose a couple, no worries. You'll just take care of that on downtime.
Yeah. Whatever, it's 2.
Of course, you can use these to play pranks, too. Put one of these poppets with a magma launcher inside of an outhouse. And the command that poppet that next time the air is, or the hole above it has a human derriere sitting on that hole, to aim the cannon upwards and pull the trigger.
That's a hell of a liquid shit.
Well, you know, sometimes when a kingdom owes you money, you've got to send a message. It's not about the money at that point. It's about the principle. This is why I nuke kingdoms. Just because, you know, the next kingdom that offers to pay me money is going to fucking pay up.
Like, look.
Why? Because I... The last time
that someone tried this shit on me, their entire asses melted when they took a shit.
Oh, even worse. About 5 months ago, I finally developed Bunker Busters.
You're not spilling that one on the podcast.
Please. No, I am not spilling Bunker Busters because that is a variant that I based off of the...
ICBM?
Basically, it was a miniaturized ICBM turned essentially into a Patriot missile. And then I turned that Patriot missile into a Bunker Buster. And so, I don't care. If that king owes me money, he is going to die. Horribly. So, when it comes...
Creative players are bastards.
Creative players can be bastards, and part of the reason I went on this whole long diatribe is if you have a magical world, and you're trying to make magic a living, breathing part of your world, you're going to have players who look at this and try to ramp it up too far. So as a GM, you're going to have to go, no, dude. Magic is common, but as long as it's fundamentally good for life and nature, or some... You're going to have to come up with a bullshit reason... Make it sound not bullshit, and then limit your players with offensive capabilities who just look at this as a giant playground to blow shit up.
It's gonna happen, though.
It's gonna happen. It's the same thing as when you have, like, alchemists in the group.
Yeah.
You were there for a previous campaign where all the money... And this was me being nice as a GM. This was me being nice as a GM. This is you guys should have been bowing down before my feet going, oh my god, he's being nice. Because I introduced paper money that was alchemically treated, and the first thing everybody does is they look at the alchemist in the group and says, hey, can you make that? Can we counterfeit it? I introduced paper money as a courtesy to you guys because...
Carrying capacity
alone.
Gold stacks.
Well, the game was intended to go super high level, and who wants to be lugging around 45,000 gold pieces in their back pocket? That's 450 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, that's
heavier than most of the characters in that group.
That's heavier than most of the characters. That's a bag of holding just for your money. Right? So I was like, oh, paper money. You'll have a much smaller bag and 45,000 gold pieces. That'd be roughly 45 pounds. So I cut the weight down even more to 1/10 of 1/10. And you guys are immediately, you're like, how do we take this in...
Go full
advantage
tilt
and go full tilt, and the same thing will happen in your game if you have magic be common, like super common. Somebody will go, how do I turn that chicken coop of warming into a weapon? You know, the
you
chicken
know, all you'd really need is some kind of like launching spell like catapult and something and a separate item that'll trigger a fireball when heated beyond a certain point and gets airtime.
You can make basic. Boom. You could take the same ploy as we have, like self-opening doors that have a sensor that knows you're coming into Walmart. And somebody in D&D will look at self-opening doors and be like, how do I turn that into a weapon? Yes, if I just change one spell on that door, it will kill the world! You will have these players.
It's gonna happen.
I might not be that bad, but I know they exist.
You are that bad, but you choose to rein yourself in.
Well, not only do I choose to rein myself in, I realize that they're being on both sides of the argument. I understand the GM's job is not easy, number one. And number two, there's always causality. If I go crazy and just start launching ICBMs at every person who looks at me cross-eyed, start opening up planar rifts in the sky... orbital bombardments from the moon, whatever. Doesn't matter. If I start doing this shit, the information will eventually leak out to NPCs. And enemy number one, the world-destroying halfling, is going to have a reckoning coming.
And it, depending on where he is, it might be coming up as a short little ass.
And you know, depending also on the game. I mean, if it's a game where the GM is running it and they've got this really good idea and they're totally stoked about it, I've been on that side of the fence too. And raining on his parade with a few thousand fireballs every game session, the game ain't going to last very long. Not only is there causality in-game, there's causality outside of game, so there's a point where I've got to limit back my superpowers and be like, okay, I'm not going to drop a meat meteor on my opponent because it's too much. It was funny the first time.
That's it.
That's it.
And then, you know, then there's players like, you know, my group. We built a parabolic time chamber because in 5th edition, Demiplane says you control all aspects of the plane you create. It could be a balmy little, you know, summer retreat island. It could be anything you damn well please. Any time of day. There, like, all these list of things. But on that list, nowhere is it mentioned the rate at which time flows. So we created this so that it would be an in and out of 1 minute outside is 1 hour within. And we started just laying waste with meteor swarms. Entire just armies gone.
Well, there is one way to cure that. It's actually in the older books. Fifth edition will probably like take a look back and be like, maybe we should have ratted this. One of the things they did with that when you do demiplanes is if time is different inside the demiplane, when you leave that demiplane, you're going to catch up real quick. So you could slow time down to an absolute crawl and or stop, but if you stay in there too long, it will become your prison.
Yep.
Because the moment you leave that plane, you stay in that plane for 50 years real time, which has only been about 5 minutes inside your plane. You leave that, and now you are aging 50 years over the course of how long you were in that demiplane. So over the next 5 minutes, you're, well...
You chose poorly.
Indy! Yeah, you pulled the Indiana Jones thing and just...
Yeah, like...
Do not pass go, do not collect Ark of Covenant. You're dead.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, and like, this was just a really simple one.
Although, you can use that to power game. It just hit me. No. You advance time. Inside the chamber, if you're playing a creature who is effectively timeless, like a half golem who's not affected by time or an undead, and you advance time inside of it to like stupid ass amounts. I'm talking like stupid. You know, like 1 to 1,000s. You know, like 1 minute in the real world is like 1,000 years inside of it. You go in there. There's a big bit table bump. You go inside of your fucking plane. And by the time you get out, you are going to accrue so many fucking bonuses. It's just going to be grotesque.
Oh, yeah.
Because of age and maturation rules. For mortal creatures, when you start aging up, you know, like your wisdom will go up. Your constitution strength and... Yeah, con strength and dex will go down, but usually your wisdom goes up the first, and intelligence sometimes gets a little bit of a bump.
Yeah.
But usually it's wisdom that gets the primary bump.
Which makes sense.
You've been around for a long time. Well, here's the thing. You go into your fucking stupid-ass time capsule. You spend 1,000 years in there, and you come out. So only 10 minutes in real time has passed, but now you are 1,000 years older than everybody else from 10 minutes ago. So that's 100 years. Let's see this. That's a +2 wisdom for 100 years. So let's see this.
+20.
+20 wisdom. So for 10 minutes worth of work, you've just come out with a +10 wisdom permanently.
Yeah.
So you break out your fucking little TI-82 calculator, and you're like, I'm going to spend my downtime in there all week. You're going to come out the wisest motherfucker. Your
wisdom stat will be through the roof.
Well, not only your wisdom stat will be through the roof, your score for resisting certain types of magics will just be insane. All of your wisdom-based skills will just be like, yeah, don't even fucking roll it. You win.
Oh, yeah, I see you coming from 3 miles out. How? You can't even see 3 miles. I can still see it.
I can predict what he's up to. Yeah, he's kind of a skeevy little bitch. He's going to come over the hill. You haven't even met him. Yeah, I just figured it. My knee's swelling up. Storm's coming in. Whatever.
But what we like, how we used our parabolic time chamber was get a full rest every 24 minutes. And of course, unload all our spells. Pop in, pop out. Unload all our spells. Pop in, pop out. Well, unload. Infinite. Fucking asinine. We are bastards. We are the reason that people don't like... Actually, you know what? Here's another tale of magic gone awry.
You know, actually, I think I could bomb your parabolic chamber.
Probably.
Give me enough gold pieces and a few more feats, and I think I could figure something out.
You could.
It's just like some sort of like Star Trek temporal nuke.
Tachyons and bullshit.
Like, the moment you guys teleport, go into your plane, it'll teleport through that opening rift inside, and just boom. Well, you're all inside, because you got no spells. What are you going to do? You're going to fight a bomb in there? And double down. I'll even make the bomb into a golem, so it'll explode whether you defeat it or not.
Yep.
It'll be a bomb golem. I'll shape it in the shape of a little Japanese child.
Yep. That sounds right.
Because I'm a bastard.
So another tale of magic gone awry. This is the reason that Doc Martin hates magic users. Point blank. This is the tale of Weasley. This is a long tale, so buckle down for a sec.
Okay, well, your tale is the last on the show because we're coming to time. So go ahead and tell the tale of Weasley. And for our listeners, enjoy the show.
So Weasley was a human necromancer type wizard. He stuck around. He kind of followed he was good for the party. He was an item creator. He was that sort of ingenious bastard. Along our travels, we find the diary of a self-made Lich King who we defeated. Took a little bit of doing because he had 8 phylacteries, like a bastard. And once, you know, we did this, Weasley gets the bright idea. It's like, you know, all the notes are right here. You guys back me up? I want to do this?
All right. Sure. Let's do it, Weasley.
And that's exactly what happened. The DM ruled, okay, so you turn yourself into a lich. This process involves a fundamental alignment shift. Have fun fighting him. So we had to beat him, and then, you know, actually beat him several times, because, you know, his phylactery is still with us. We stashed it a fair ways out, but... You know, we had to beat him a few times before he could will himself not to just homicidal maniac everything, as liches are a little prone to do.
Harry Potter.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of he who should not be named type vibes.
I have no nose, so I must kill everyone.
Yep,
pretty much. Because I'm evil. I'm blatantly and patently evil for no reason.
Yes, and I am leaving for no reason.
Oh, I got that pun.
I'm glad you caught it. So, carry on a little ways. He now kind of gets himself situated back to mostly normal. So we can go adventuring again. We go, after a little while, we hit level 17. I get access, because I was playing a bard, to True Polymorph. And Weasley pipes up and goes, "Hey, I wonder." So Weasley went from Weasley. He got the Archmage title around level 7, because that's about where the stat block is in the book. So it's an assumption of a level of control over magic. Weasley the Archmage turned into Weasley the Archmage Lich King, because it was a Lich King's, notary. Okay. Yeah, it was a fluff word. That's all it is. And then, at 17th level, we turned him into an adult Shadow Bronze Dragon. Because Weasley was kind of playing the power gamey motherfucker little shit that he is. You know. So, the DM goes, alright, 5 minute break, I need to think about this. He comes back from break, and offers Weasley this. Your soul is already separated from your body. So with that said, your natural body is this dragon that you've been turned into. However, while in this form, you cannot cast above a certain level of spell slot. But the base body has its own powers, so that kind of balanced out. But in this form, you have one hit point. Any damage that you take, you're gonna, the dragon form has a natural polymorph ability into a humanoid form. So he could flip back into that form, that humanoid form that he once inhabited, and get access to his higher tier spells, because now he can move his hands like he used to. He couldn't do that as a dragon.
Hands across America!
The DM gave him the caveat, your human form has one hit point. Any and all damage that is above that one hit point carries over into your dragon form, and you snap back. So now, Weasley, the Archmage, Necromancer, Lich King, is also an adult Shadow Bronze Dragon. I don't know, that's like 8 words?
That's like power gaming.
Oh yeah, that was extreme. It's also why Doc Martin hates spellcasters, because the bullshit we came up with was off the charts. We charmed the Dwarven Kingdom into being the sole and only, like we had the domination of their diamond market as being the exclusive seller.
It actually, in hindsight, makes me not feel so bad about playing an intelligence-based barbarian using a kitten as a weapon.
Yeah, no, I believe that. So, you know, Weasley is a really good case point, but the story doesn't stop there. Eventually, you know, we get up to like 19th level, 20th level, and the Raven Queen, she is not a fan of undead, in the least. So Weasley comes up with this idea, you know, with all his brilliance. It's like, you know what? I want to talk to her. I want to try to swing a deal with the Raven Queen. DM's like, all right, this is interesting. I want to see where this goes. Raven Queen comes down. They talk for a little bit. Weasley agrees to hunt down other liches for all time to take their power away from them and basically be the Raven Queen's champion for all time. In exchange, the Raven Queen keeps and holds his phylactery and allows him to respawn on the, you know, when he's not on that plane, because that's normally what the rules say. Like, throwing a lich's phylactery into a bag of holding, they can't respawn anymore. They futzed that rule to make it work for the situation.
Yeah, well,
Weasley cast a wish spell to create a contingency for when the Raven Queen decided enough is enough, this one's gotta go. That would teleport him to her plane, so he could grab it and then teleport out.
My phylactery is the stars themselves.
That was how he managed to work that deal. So now...
No, my deal? My deal is called a punt gun. My deal is I get XP for every living thing on the planet. And the exoplanets, if there happen to be living things on there. In fact, fuck this whole solar system. Fuck the solar system sitting next to us. I'm just going to turn this all into my own personal nebula now, and my phylactery itself is written in the stars. That gives me about 4 billion years to figure out an alternative solution.
Yeah.
So, you know, Weasley might be smart, but his phylactery is not the cosmos.
And you can get there.
I'm not divulging how the punt gun is built, but yeah, you can build it by level 5.
Neither here nor there.
All the XP is mine. And the player characters can't fight me over it because it's instantaneous. It happens just as fast as a big bang. Suck it.
All right. But Weasley is another really good example of how players can take it to 12. So, buyer beware?
Buyer beware, yeah. Caveat emptor.
Sounds like final thoughts time.
It is final thoughts time. And holy shit. My final thoughts? Yeah. Magic can be prevalent in your world. If you want to make it a living entity, just make it common.
Mm-hmm.
Make it just as common as technology.
Yeah. Well, variants on sending stones, variants on toasters.
For anything from toasters, unbreaking wagon wheels, like you mentioned earlier.
Toothbrushes.
Self-cleaning doorways that, you know, clean workers as they leave the mines. Whatever.
Yeah.
Just make it fairly common and quality of life stuff. You know, don't make it arms and armor, weapons and machines of war constantly, because that just changes the power dynamics of why your adventure is in the first place so dramatically it's not even worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But for quality of life stuff, no problem.
Yeah.
That's my final thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, bringing that to the case is like, it's not just the quality of life. It's also how you draw attention to magic in your world. And that's not just, you know, it's a quality of life thing. It's everywhere. It's prevalent. Yes, I know. Sorry. But it's also what hand motions were used at the casting. What verbiage was used at the casting. What mean mug am I getting as I get the double bird, you know?
I'm trying to cast a spell here.
And how do you disrupt that? Things like counterspell. What happens? You know? Some people are, like, in Magic Gathering, there's a bunch of cards that are like, wizards are always evolving bigger and brighter ways to say no.
Mm-hmm. Alright, well, that's our show. We've hit that mark, and
a little bit beyond.
It's a little bit beyond. I think our listeners might want to do other stuff. Maybe. I don't know.
We're all gamers.
We're all gamers. And, you know, 1 hour and a few minutes of podcast time. Oh my god, they want to play games. We want to play games. Everybody wants to play games. It's the biggest fucking thing out there now. Everybody's a gamer. Except for mobile gamers. Fuck those guys.
Seconded.
Yep. So, if you guys want more, if you got any suggestions for future shows, you can find us on Facebook, MeWe, YouTube, Podbean, Android, iTunes. We're all over the place.
We're getting there.
Hey, we're near the top of Google, and we're starting to get attention in weird ways. And we've actually got a couple episodes coming up here soon where people have contacted us and given us ideas.
Ooh,
yeah.
Our first feedback episodes.
Yeah, we got feedback episodes coming up. One of them was a topic given to me by a gentleman named San-Sun. Sansun Vidal Sansun. I don't know. He's a Star Wars player, loves Star Wars, and you know, he used to do role playing. He's got an idea for a topic that's coming up in a future episode. So that'll be fun. We're gonna talk about miniatures in that one. And Wild Iron J777, I think his name is. I know it's Wild Iron and a bunch of random characters. He's in one of my guilds, and when he heard that we do podcasts, he tossed out an idea. So we're going to talk about how different genres of games get interest in different character roles and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
How they attract different players. So we've got a couple of suggestion episodes coming up from those gentlemen.
Ooh, awesome site.
I know. We're starting to get noticed.
This
is bad. This is bad, because if we get noticed, people are going to notice that I swear a lot. Oh, and my last final thought is I finally got hate on YouTube for one of my videos I put up.
Yes!
The comment,
it's a milestone.
It is a milestone. The comment, though, had to be deleted. It was completely nonsensical. The spelling and grammar was terrible. And the guy insulted me. And, you know, he called me a child molester, you know, chimo, but he didn't quite spell it right, and of course, since it was all nonsensical and added nothing to the conversation, I was like, I kind of want to save this insult for later and put it in my pocket, but at the same time, it was just so craptastic. I mean, if you're gonna come at me, bro, I mean, just
do it right.
Do it right, man. Come at me, you know, with, you know, at least some intellect. you know,
a properly thought out argument.
You know, well, come at me with, you know, a proper thought out insult, for fuck's sake. I mean, it's like, it's a good start. I mean, if you're gonna come at me with like, yeah, don't go on dating websites and look for underage girls, and of course, that was the gist of it that I got, but it was grammatically, like, the words were jumbled up, like this guy just snorted a couple of rails and just went out, waked and baked, and then decided to type this shit. So, I actually had to read the insult like 5 times before I'm like, what? Oh, now I get it.
What was it?
It took me like 2 minutes to comprehend what this person was trying to convey.
It reminds me a little bit of Monsters, Inc. You know, where's the kid, you one-eyed cretin? First of all, it's cretin. If you're going to insult me, do it proper.
Exactly. So, yeah, we're stepping it up. So we got a couple of episodes coming up that are based on suggestions. And our YouTube is active somewhat again. I'm actually in the middle of a really big project on that one.
Hoopa!
And
we've been rambling.
So, Google us. Game Goblin out.
Kazarkan, back to the skies.
Those motherfuckers!
Colonel, I'm here substituting for the moniker, and I'm not that good at it. Do you have a box I can hide in?
Listen.